Blog Talk Radio.
Here come the volunteers. Wherever you listen throughout the world, it's football time in Tennessee.
Checkerboard Radio with Lee Crow and Andrew Durago. Checkerboardradio.com.
Welcome to Checkerboard Radio here on the Bald Radio channel of B-Sporto Network. This is Andrew Durago. Joining me as always is Lee Crow. Fun show. A lot of stuff happened this week off the field at the Econo Lodge off Level Road. Lee, first of all, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing great, and you're absolutely right. This was a crazy week. Every kind of thing that could possibly happen off the field pretty much did happen, so it's going to be a fun show.
You had to think it was going to happen eventually. Too much good stuff has been going on this month. You had the Nike launch at the beginning of the month. You had a couple commitments. Nothing bad had happened while I was out of town in D.C. a couple weeks ago. And as we say here in Knoxville and people that cover Knoxville are in the Vols, make sure your cup is always securely fastened because something's going to happen eventually. And sure enough, it did. First, right off the bat, Charles Mosley gets cited with a driving under the influence, something that Checkerboard Radio broke, I think on Tuesday or Wednesday. Apparently he was at the Econo Lodge Motel off Level Road in the Turkey Creek area where he was with friends, left there, was pulled over for going 79 and a 55 on I-40. Officers smelled marijuana and found marijuana residue in the car. Mosley claimed that his friends were smoking weed at the lodge and somehow it got into his car. And I know this is going to be something controversial. He's been suspended. It depends on what your take is on marijuana use. But I tweeted it out earlier today that I'm going to take a big stance on this, and this is my official stance. Kick Charles Mosley off the team.
I'm going to have to agree with you on that.
And it's not about weed. I don't care if you smoke a bowl every once in a while. If you want to do that, more power to you. But Charles Mosley, and part of this may not be his fault, and I'm not talking about the incident this week. I'm talking about the entire circumstance of his career at Tennessee. He broke his leg in a car accident last summer and was out for the entire year getting a medical redshirt. But we saw it on Twitter all last year. The kid is young. He likes tweeting out that he's at parties. He likes tweeting pictures of him at parties. His weight got out of control. I mean, he was already a big guy. This spring, we saw him, healthy, move around from defensive tackle to they moved to the offensive line towards the end of spring, just trying to find a home for the kid.
Honestly, Andrew, that I think that doomed him right there. I mean, you saw at the spring game, they had the little sprints. So, they were doing little competitions, and they had the guys of equal sizes doing sprints. And he was dead last of the linemen. I mean, there's like linemen his size or a little smaller than him, like just leaving him like 10 yards behind on these 40s they ran at the end. And it just doomed him, I think, when they put him on the offensive side of the ball, because you got to be fairly mobile to be a guard. He'll never be a tackle. So he's meant to be a DT. So if they moved him over to offense, that pretty much doomed him anyway, I think.
Well, and we laughed about it a couple months ago when at – 1:30 or 2 in the morning on a weekend, Mosley tweeted out, quote, "Can we smoke in it?" and then deleted his Twitter for a week.
He was hacked.
Something tells me this incident this week isn't Mosley's first strike.
No, I'd say not. And immediately when he was stopped by the police officers, he said, "Hey, that weed's not mine. It belongs to my friends." He just immediately rolled over on his friends, which the first thing I heard was multiple suspensions were going to come from this. This is what I was hearing or seeing. and more people were involved. And I'm not going to name any of the names that I heard were involved, but I will name one, Kyle Oliver, because he's on a news report already, so I'm not, like, leaking anything out there that somebody else hasn't already said. Who was it? I've got it right here. Oh, Knox News. Knox News put out that a name as an associate in the report was Kyle Oliver. So he immediately rolled on his friends, and at least Kyle Oliver made it into the report. So,
well, and like that tweet that he put out and then deleted at this point, and I'm not, like I said, I don't care if somebody smokes weed. You know, it's legal in other states. It's legal in other parts of the world, not legal in Tennessee. That's fine. If you got a DUI for being too stoned to drive, cool, whatever. But the thing is, at this point, and you and I talked about it months ago with the commitments from Shai Tuttle and Khalil McKenzie. He got recruited over immediately, and he's already been recruited over at the offensive line standpoint. This kid has become nothing but trouble, and you know what's really nice? An extra roster spot.
Absolutely. I went ahead and did the count, and I'm counting 30 freshmen and redshirt freshmen together. You add the Mosley comes back, that's 31. PQ does finally make it in next week. That'd be two, so it'd be 32 freshmen, 22 sophomores and redshirt sophomores, 14 juniors and redshirt juniors, 14 seniors and redshirt seniors. And that's not counting Pearson because I think his days are over as well. So the count now is 81 if you leave off Mosley and PQ. So that gives them a little more space to get the class up to 18, maybe 19 right there. So I think if you're a marginal talent these days at UT, like a Jock Bruce, like a Charles Mosley, I think you're walking on eggshells. I mean, because you can just be processed immediately and recruited over, like, today.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's already been recruited over at the defensive tackle position with Khalil McKenzie and Shai Tuttle. And you and I talked about at the end of spring how it was a very odd move to, like, the next to last day before or practice before the orange or white game. It was announced he was moving to offensive line. Sure, they were saying they wanted bodies for the orange and white game. No, they can't find a home for him. And we already have players that do that or have done that in the past and bounce around from position to position. Tennessee's not in the place right now where they can just have dead weight on it. And I'm sorry, that's what Charles Mosley is. He's dead weight. He's 300-plus pounds of dead weight. So make an example out of him. Say you've met – because, like I said, I guarantee this is not his first strike. Make an example out of him. Say, you're gone. Have a great day. And then – and this kind of trails into the rumor about Justin Martin this week that after Mosley got arrested, there was a team meeting, and Butch lit into the team because they've been making dumb decisions. The rumor is Justin Martin mouthed off during that meeting and his release paperwork was signed, but we now know that's not true. But I do believe the part of there was a team meeting and Butch lit into them. So yeah. Make an example out of Mosley. The kid hasn't played. He's probably not going to. Me personally, I'd like another scholarship available for the 2016 class.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, he's just a bigger, more personable Alan Carson. I mean, he's going to take up a scholarship for years and do nothing. So you have no margin for error when you're a marginal talent right now. There's tons of kids want to come in there, want to get on the Nike bandwagon, want to get on the momentum train. And there's just no room for error for guys like that. And I'm not saying like a five-star kid can screw up and get a few chances. I mean, you've seen that before, and you'll see it forever, because if you've got talent, you can make more mistakes like that. But guys like Mosley, guys like Jock Bruce, I mean, you know, sorry, guys, y'all got to go.
Well, and the same thing with Mosley, like you mentioned with Kyle Oliver being named as an associate. Snitches get stitches where I come from.
Yeah. He immediately pointed them out. That's what's funny to me. They're back at the Econo Lodge. She just rolled right over on them.
And well, that goes back to my original point of this probably isn't his first time. why are you going to the Econo Lodge off Lovell Road to smoke weed?
I guess it's
your car in a parking garage on campus. Go.
Yeah.
Go to Renaissance 4.
Yeah. Oh man, that's too funny.
Why are you driving across town and booking a terrible motel to smoke a bowl?
Yep. And I guess you have to, you hate to leap, but I mean, you know, you remember the tweet? I mean, he might have been looking for a motel that night, you know. We're going to meet over here at the Days Inn. Can we smoke in it? You know, that kind of question. I mean, it fits perfectly. So, yeah, man, you got to make an example of this guy in particular, man. He's not disciplined on his weight, marginal talent, and he's already messed up a couple times just with some faux pas like that tweet. So, he's got to go.
I think coming, you know, something is this week of Jock Bruce. It started out as he was suspended for off the field issues. Jimmy Himes of the Sports Animal broke that news. But then it turned into, I guess, yesterday or Friday that he is amicably leaving the team. And we documented on Checkerboard Radio, one of Bruce's friends on the 21st, about 5 days ago, was saying he was just late for class. The teacher emailed Coach Jones, and Bruce tweeted out on the 22nd, late at night, everything's going to be all right. It's not my grades. I was late for class just to get that straight. The thing that kind of threw me off about it is I think it's more than that. There's kind of there's one rumor out there about it with, and this is pure message board talk, and you can take it with a grain of salt, that it's a bullying issue, and Jason Kroon punched Bruce in the face, and Bruce
isn't
on the team anymore.
I read that as well, and I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. There was a documented case, and I think a couple of people actually reported it. It was fairly true, or it was supposed to be true. Not necessarily message board father, but is that I think Bruce and maybe one other true freshman may have walked on the power tee in the locker room, and some upperclassmen kind of checked him on that. I don't know if Kroon was the one that did that or not. I don't know where that rumor would have come from, but I find that hard to believe, because that's what you do as an upperclassman. You whip these young kids into shape. So I don't believe he was getting beat on by Kroon by any stretch of the imagination. I just think that's a rumor, but you never know, though. I guess it could be true, because there's a lot of smoke on these message boards. It turns out to be fire.
Well, and if it is something about, you know, he got checked because he walked on the power tee in the locker room, you know, Lee, I'm a superstitious person, and, I mean, you attended UT just like I did. And I don't know how much they changed it, but, you know, outside the library, there is, like, the school emblem or logo right there on pedestrian walkway.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the long-standing rumor has always been, it, you know, if you walk on it, you'll never graduate. To this day, I've still never walked on that seal. I always walk around it. Even on game days, it could be a huge crowd walking towards the stadium down pedestrian walkway. I will walk around that. I will be like, hey, excuse me, I got to get around. I will not walk on that. Even though I've already graduated from UT and I have no intentions of going back for school, but it's still just a superstition. So to me, yeah, like if I was a UT player and I was in the locker room and, you know, it's a longstanding thing, hey, you know, yeah, there's a power tee in the carpet or whatever, don't walk on it. You know, some blue shirt freshman would just take his muddy shoes through it. Hey, I mean, like I would probably be like, hey, what are you doing? We don't do that here. And he probably mouthed off. The other interesting part about Bruce, and this is why I love social media, Jock Bruce's mom hopped on Facebook.
Oh, Lord.
Have you read this yet?
No, I haven't. You're breaking something to me right now. This is because I've been off Facebook for years. So
I'm going to read. This was tweeted out last night by Newmarket Mahler and a screenshot of it. Jock Bruce's mother at 12:14 in the morning the other night tweeted or Facebook posted or commented, whatever it's called, quote, son, I waited to read all the responses from people, but you don't owe nobody no explanation at all, because ain't none of these people helping nor feeding you. Anybody with knowledge of how racist UT is and how they do black local players understands anyway. Keep your head high and know that certain things happen to great people that are blessings in disguise. I think she meant to type disguise. The hardest battles produce the best diamonds. Bold claim by Miss Bird saying UT is racist against local players.
She went there with it. I can't believe that. That's the first time I've heard that. She actually went there with it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I really have to go back and look at the guys that were dismissed in the past, and you know, look at the demographics. But I mean, I've never heard anything like that before. As far as local players, you know, I've never heard that.
I mean, Devron Young was a black local player, and he played for 4 years.
You look at Bruce's official statement. Because he put it out and like tweeted it, I guess someone tweeted it. It says, "I would like to announce that I will no longer be attending the University of Tennessee. Coach Jones and I have talked and have together decided that this is what's best for me at this time. I still plan to attend college as well as play football, and I look forward to working with Coach Jones and the University of Tennessee as they help me find an appropriate fit. I appreciate the support I've received from Coach Jones and the entire Vol Nation." So the tenor of that sounds a lot different than what his mom just released in the middle of the night. So, I mean, I guess they're racist, but they're still helping him find a school, so.
Are you talking about, like, the typed-out statement that has his signature and the date on it?
Yeah.
If you or anybody listening think Jock Bruce typed that up, I've got a bridge to tell you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if one of the players typed that up and said, "Hey, dude, you need to go ahead and sign this and get gone."
Yeah. You know, he was a blue shirt, so his scholarship wouldn't have really kicked in until August 1st. And I guess they had to make a move now because, you know, the clock was dwindling down on that. You know, this could be actually good for him because he could end up somewhere in state, like an FBS school, or maybe go to a JUCO and get immediate playing time. But I think he was kind of doomed at UT talent wise from the start.
I saw it last night. I'm trying to find it real quick. He's already getting interest and calls about school from schools interested in him. I mean, it's a couple small schools that are interested. It's like Memphis, MTSU. The really interesting one to me is Northeast Oklahoma, the JUCO that Justin Martin came from. It's often referred to as NEO. But a lot of Tennessee has a history of getting players from that school, and they turned out to be good players. To me, Bruce's best option would be to go there. Don't go to MTSU. Don't go to Memphis. Go to this JUCO where they get you, if football is what you're planning on doing with your life, NEO will get you ready.
Yeah.
But
that's proven.
It made sense to me, and this is my personal opinion, for Bruce to leave. We've talked about it. He wasn't going to contribute this year or probably ever. He was going to be maybe when people are tired, throw him in the game kind of kid. But for a player to, you know, if he was at running back, if he was at slot receiver. But the thing I personally believe, and this is nothing against him, I've interviewed him back when I was with TSR. He's a great kid in my interactions with him. But my best guess is he showed up and thought he was the hot dog, and he got put in his place and was, you know, we already know he wasn't doing the things in the classroom, and we know Butch Jones and his staff put an emphasis on that. So,
yeah, I mean,
he can be like, "I'm the local kid and I can do what I want."
Yeah, I don't know, really. I mean, I really don't. I mean, one thing I did take out of this whole fiasco with Bruce is that apparently, you know, Butch Jones has the professors on campus, you know, looking in on these guys. You know, if you, you've been to college, you got a couple degrees. I've got a degree and a master's. I've never once had an instructor or a professor or a teacher's assistant, whoever was teaching the class that day, like, wonder if I was, you know, wonder where I was if I missed class or if I was late. And I never heard a word about it. It's college. It's big boy stuff. Nobody cares if you're 2 minutes late. Nobody cares if you miss. You're paying to go there in one form or another. So if you don't go to class, I mean, it's on you, really. I don't even remember taking role in any kind of college courses. I mean, they might have changed that since, you know, I went in the Stone Age. But, I mean, at least he has the professors checking up on his guys. That is one good takeaway for Butch and the staff, is that, you know, make sure his guys go to class.
Well, I mean, I've got kind of two stories that relate to this, and it's kind of funny. Well, and because when I was in college, there were some classes that did have mandatory attendance. Like, you had to be there. Like, they made it part of your grade. Then there were the others that, like, I had a Greek mythology class freshman year that I went to, like, five times. Because I signed up for it because it was an elective. I was like, cool, I like hearing about stories about, you know, Thor and Zeus and all that, and the class was not what I thought it would be, so I just stopped going, and I showed up on test days, and I barely managed. Somehow I got a C- in that class. But the two stories that kind of pertain to this is, one, you know, when I was in school, I had a bunch of classes. I was a sport management major for undergrad, and you would see it every day. In each class I had with athletes, you'd see somebody, usually within the first 5 minutes of class starting, you know, there's that little glass slit on some of the doors, or somebody would actually, if there wasn't, they would open the door and poke their head in, looking to see if the players were in there.
Yeah, yeah. I think they did that at Meyer as well.
And the best story I have from this is when I was working at UT, I was taking a summer school class right before I was finishing my undergrad during the summer, and I was working for UT, and the class I had was on the far side of campus, like close to downtown. I forget the name of the building, but it had somebody there. I probably had maybe three or four players in the class, and it was an elective. It was like child and family studies, and it was basically about like going through the development of children, like year by year. And the person that was the class checker approached me and said, hey, you have class with these players, and I'm not going to name them. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, hey, I really don't like going all the way out there to make sure they're there. Will you make sure they're there? And I go,
oh,
yeah,
no.
Sure. Whatever.
Oh, and no.
So I'm a 22-year-old. And, you know, huge ball fan. Didn't really care if these guys, and I still don't. I don't care if a player goes to class. As long as you're eligible to play, I don't care if you go to class. I don't care what your grades are. So I, after class one day, decided to approach these players and say, hey, you know how you guys have a class checker? And they go, yeah. I go, well, it's technically me. And they're like, oh, okay. And I go, I don't care if y'all come to class. I'll say you're here. Just be here on test days and get good grades enough that you can play. And they say, cool, man, appreciate it. And they were gone.
Yeah.
They stopped they stopped coming to that class. But they showed up on test days, and they took the test, and they all passed. But I will admit this, on the last day, like the final day, we all took the final and we're walking out. Andrew got himself a nice little goodie bag of some UT shorts and t-shirts.
Oh my God. You were the worst confidential informant ever. That is the worst thing I've ever heard. You were terrible at your job.
And you know what? All of those guys played that season, and they did great that season.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, you know, a lot of these courses are, you know, if you just do the book work, I mean, you don't necessarily, what do you get from a teacher? What do you get from a teacher anyway, most of the time? I mean, they're just reiterating what you're already supposed to be studying in your book or your class material or your outline for the course will be that whole semester or quarter or whatever you're on. And I mean, do you really get a lot from the teacher that much anyway? I mean, if you can read the book, you can pretty much do the work, I would imagine, most of the time, unless it's something, you know, extremely complex. I mean, I remember we had some self-paced courses for math. You just basically read these modules and go take these little self-timed out to paced courses or a test on certain days. And I mean, you could get through the whole course in like, you know, a month, you know, instead of the whole semester, if you just studied enough and took all the tests in time at your own pace. I mean, I'm sure they still have a lot of stuff like that now, but I mean, really, I mean, you know, if you need to be in class, most of the time you're sleeping through class if it's a morning class, to be honest with you. So if you can just take the test and pass, I mean, who cares if they're in attendance?
Well, and this, my quick second story relates to kind of the Charles Mosley, can we smoke in a tweet that you and I saw. While I was working for UT, I was approached by a head coach of a women's sport because she knew I was friends with several of her players. And she said, hey, can you do me a favor? Will you, and this is, shows my age a little bit, if they put anything, you know, questionable on Facebook or MySpace, will you let me know? And I said, yeah, sure, whatever. Because then again, snitches get stitches. And two, does anybody really care if a Lady Vol gets suspended?
Yeah.
This wasn't,
that's
this,
funny.
I'll say this, this wasn't basketball. I will say this much. This wasn't basketball. This is a different Lady Vol sport.
What's funny is they're coming to you basically to enlist you as a snitch, and you're not doing it. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard. I mean, it's like, you're like, yeah, I'll look at it. I'll check up on them for you, and you don't do it. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
All I cared about when I worked at UT was trying to find a career and our team's winning some games. Sorry if I contributed to their grades. I'm really sure the football players in that child and family studies class cared about their general studies degree. That's why I love watching football games on TV. When it pops up, like, you know, here's a bio on random player, and they show their major at the bottom. No one cares that the offensive tackle is in recreational studies or is in the best is when they put undecided and the dude's a senior.
Yeah. Don't you have to declare by your junior year?
Like, dude,
you had to.
When they put that up, they're like, okay, so we're all in agreement that dude is here for football and doesn't care about classes. All right, ready, break.
Yeah. I like the general studies I've seen on there too. Just general studies. He's just studying in general. Nothing in particular, just general studies.
He's just taking classes. He's here. Whatever. He's doing enough to be eligible.
Well, we mentioned Bruce gone from the team. That's one roster spot, one extra scholarly, one extra commitment space. We mentioned Mosley, who may or may not ever play for the University of Tennessee. Well, I guess we'll know fairly soon because I guess if he's not, I mean, I guess he has to be enrolled for August, but if he's still suspended, I mean, he's already burned a red shirt, what next? So, and then the other person to leave this week was Devin Swofford. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Devon Swofford is you can't, I can't knock him. I think he's done everything he could have done at Tennessee. You know, local guy out of, well, semi-local from Kingsport out at Dobbins Bennett. I coached against him. He's made some great plays at Tennessee. He had a pick six against Florida, had the touchdown on his birthday against Georgia on the block punt. apparently he suffered a neck injury during the bowl game and tried to play through it. Didn't really realize what was going on until his arm went numb while he was playing Xbox at home one day, and then finally got checked out. And they've kind of given him the realization, basically the way the article I read, I think it was by Wes Rucker at 24/7. It's a really great article by Wes and the 24/7 crew, who probably do the best coverage of anybody in Knoxville. But basically his options were have a surgery similar to what Peyton Manning had to fix his neck, or, you know, just call it a day in a career. And he, you know, said, you know, his long-term health is what is important to him. You know, he loves playing football, loves Tennessee and his teammates. And I think he made the right decision. You know, you've seen these NFL players retire this past offseason, just over young guys retire over concussion concerns. So with Swofford, you know, I mean, he wasn't going to be a full-time contributor. He was going to be, you know, a special teams guy, but he is now going to be on a medical scholarship, and he's going to take on a role as a student coach, and I think that's great for him.
Yeah, I agree. I wish the best for this guy, man. He came in, walked on, got a scholarship, scored a couple times in some big games. I mean, he's lived the dream, man, and I just hate it didn't work out for him, but the writing was on the wall with playing time anyway, so this is absolutely the best decision for him. He wasn't going to play past this level, and you want to be able to, you know, spend time with your grandkids one day and not be crippled, you know. So it's the best decision for him to make, and, you know, it works out for the university as well, and to let the guy be a student coach, I mean, that's a heck of an honor. I mean, he's not a GA, obviously, because he hadn't graduated, but he's a student coach. That's pretty cool, and I'm happy with the way that worked out for him.
Well, I mean, and that's something that being a student coach could turn into something more for him. You know, he's going to get his degree. I think he said he was going to do like sports psychology or physiology, something like that. But it's something that could turn into something. You know, he could become a GA at Tennessee or at another school, and, you know, start a coaching career. And I mean, he has a serious injury, and I'm not trying to, you know, compare apples to oranges, but I mean, for all we know, down the road, he could become, you know, an Inky Johnson, a guy that says, hey, this happened to me when I was playing football, you know, and I had to, you know, I made the decision that if I couldn't do it anymore. And like I said, I'm not comparing him, you know, because Inky Johnson did have a seriously traumatic injury that could have killed him. And, but that's something that's cool. I mean, in Swofford, you know, like I said, local guy, good for him, you know, let him do it. You know, he's probably close with several players on the team, and having them that on as a, you know, just a guy to kind of get in their ear, you know, especially with the young guys, the new kids coming in saying, you know, man, coach is ripping me. He's like, hey, I've gone through it. They're just trying to make you better.
Yeah. I know absolutely nothing about the young man other than what I've seen on the field and some of his backstory, but I mean, I'm sure he's probably a student of the game. He's obviously not as physically gifted as some of the other DBs on the squad, but he always manages to seem to be in the right place at the right time. You got guys that are absolutely stud beasts back there that never get an interception. He's got a couple of them with a pick six. So, I mean, he just seemed to be around the ball a lot, and, you know, I hate it didn't work out for him on the field, but this could turn into something real for him if he sticks with the coaching, starting off as a student coach at, you know, 20 years of age. So we got a caller. I'm going to bring him on from the 706 area code. Caller from 706, you're on Checkerboard Radio.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Chris from Georgia.
Hey, Chris.
What's up? You guys talk about Swofford, man. Great kid. He'll always go down in Tennessee history. I mean, that block punt and him picking it up and running it in, and the first time we ever wore Smokey Grays, I mean, that'll be in highlight films forever. So, I mean, he's put his mark on Tennessee history for forever, and he literally gave his all for Tennessee. I mean, I put him right there on the same level as Inky Johnson, you know, I mean, and this will be a kid, I think he'll always be a part of a Tennessee football. He'll constantly be coming back and be talking to the students and all this stuff. And I'm proud that he played at Tennessee. And I mean, everything happens for a reason. Everybody knows that, you know, but, As for Mosley, I don't know. I mean, is a DUI and involved drugs, should it be suspended? Absolutely. I don't leave Tennessee unless, I mean, it's absolutely what has to be done. I think this is the first situation we've heard from him, so I don't think he should have to go anywhere. I think that Butch can handle it, and I think that if you there's certain things like hitting a woman with the Trayvon Park situation that needs to be dealt with, and that people need to understand that heavy consequences come from that. And while heavy consequences need to come from a DUI, you know, you got teams, you got Mark Richt, one of the most strict coaches in college football, had their kicker get a BUI voting under the influence and was suspended for 2 games. So I think 4 games for Mosley, probably the most he really needs. And you just need to teach this kid, you know, we need to get to him early. And if he needs treatment, get him treatment and move on. Let him continue his career at Tennessee. As for Bruce, I've heard a lot of different stuff. I've heard some quote-unquote bullying situations. I've heard, you know, some hazing stuff, but I'm not going to get into it because it's message board drama, so I'm not going to bring it up on here. People can look it up if they want. What I wanted to call in and ask about with this Feaster kid and with the Stevenson kid, what do you guys think our chances are? I mean, we've got two true blue, honest-to-God starters, whereas most SEC teams have 3 or 4, like Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas. You know, do you think we have a really good shot of landing one of these two kids? I mean, Stevenson would be awesome this year, but I think for the long run, for what we're looking for in the style of offense we run, I think I'd rather have Feaster. But I feel like if we bring Stevenson in and that adds a little bit more depth to Tennessee, we're going to lose Feaster.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for the listeners that might not know, he's referring to Jordan Stevenson. He's transferring out of Wisconsin and will be eligible to play this fall for whoever he signs with. I don't know what the trouble was at Wisconsin, but he's not going to be able to be admitted up there. So he's looking at Nebraska, Tennessee, and Oregon State. He'd be eligible to play right now. He's 5'10", 182 pounds, 4-star stud out of Texas. Be a great addition to this backfield. And, you know, I don't have a problem with getting both of them. That'd be great because you'd like to get at least one just stud running back in every class, at least, you know. And he would help add a little depth where we need it right now, and Feaster next year would be great. But to be honest with you, I think Feaster's a long shot. I know he enjoyed his visit over Orange Carpet weekend, but I think he's just a long shot. He seems to me like a kid that likes a little. Did you see his shades in the picture? Did y'all see those shades?
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw that, but I understand these kids like the attention, but I mean, if you look back, I followed Feaster whenever Tennessee just showed him a little bit of interest. I've been following him on Twitter, and the stuff he said about Tennessee, the only other school he said that about visiting is Clemson. I mean, and he said, you know,
yeah,
I got a lot of thinking to do now, you know. And I think what he said he loved the most about Clemson was the family feel. Every major recruit we've gotten, hey, what do you love about Tennessee? It feels like family, man.
Family.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
And I think that I honestly think we do have a good shot with Feaster. I think by the end of the week, if his recruitment's not open by the end of the week, then yeah, I'm not going to feel good about Feaster anymore. Move on. But if it opens up for the end of the week, which I think it might, then I feel good. I don't know. I mean, I feel like we had a good Orange Carpet weekend. I think that whoever we bring in, we absolutely need him. I think if Kamara has a breakout year, excuse me, he's gone. So, luckily,
well,
we got one more year with Hurd.
That's the thing with both guys, Stevenson and Feaster. Yeah, if Tennessee can flip Feaster, that's awesome. I think it's a stretch with how much he's into Clemson, especially being from the area. But with Jordan Stevenson, you know, he was denied admission by Wisconsin. I think he is the farthest reach I've seen in a long time, just because we all know how Tennessee's academics are, and with how Jimmy Cheeks made it. If he's getting denied admission at Wisconsin, he's probably not going to get into Tennessee.
Well, he may want
to come to Tennessee, but I think with what's going on campus right now with the federal investigation, with the sexual assault, I think Tennessee is going to be on extreme lockdown with basically anybody except from a recruit. I mean, this is affecting Von Pearson now. It's going to be essentially, you better be a great person off the field, and you better have straight A's in the classroom, or else you're not going to get into Tennessee.
But I think Wisconsin, though, I think just with Wisconsin, I mean, Gary Anderson left Wisconsin and went to Oregon State because he said that the entrance requirements are too strict. I mean, they think they're Harvard or Yale, you know. I mean, cause you have to have a 2.8 in high school to get accepted into Wisconsin. Like, that's ridiculous for a public state school. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And I don't know exactly what the issue was with him getting admitted and why it just now came up. I mean, you know, 2 weeks before fall semester, pretty much, you know, I guess everybody starts around, well, 3 weeks, everybody starts around the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, right in there. So, and it's just weird that it just popped up all of a sudden. I mean, I don't see why they couldn't have seen that beforehand. He's already cleared by the NCAA. He's an NCAA qualifier. So, I don't know. He may be able to get into UT, Andrew. I don't know. He might be able to. Like you said, the restrictions up there might be a little more strict than UT's admission policy. Because that's ridiculous. 2.8 is high.
I'm looking at UT's admission requirements right now, and they don't give a specific GPA. It basically says in core academic subjects, your GPA will be weighted by UT to reflect honors courses and AP courses and dual enrollment. But then, you know, there's the ACT, SAT scores, and they use super scoring. Basically, they take the average of, they take your best score from what you got in each category, you know, English, math, reading, science. But, I mean, if, and no offense to Jordan Stevenson, but, I mean, if he's rocking a 2.8 in high school, he probably didn't do super well on the ACT or SAT.
And I think I read online on his ACT got a 22.
Okay.
That'll work.
But it goes back to, you know, we kind of joked about it almost a year ago with Joe Henderson. I don't think Tennessee needs to have another issue where a kid's admitted to the team, admitted to the school, and then gets pulled off the practice field because there's issues with his grades and how he got into school. I think Jordan Stevenson, honestly, and with what's going on, a lot of the reports I've read, I think Oregon State's going to pull some strings and get him admitted.
We'll definitely see. Like I said, we gotta get a good, solid 4-star all-purpose back or higher all-purpose back before Kamar leaves, and definitely 2 before Hurd's eligible to leave, because Hurd is not the type of kid to come back his senior year. So that's what Butch needs to focus on. He's gotten O-line woes taken care of a little bit. We'll see how these guys he picked up. I mean, he picked up the best O-line and D-line class in the nation last year. So we'll see how these guys pan out. But he needs to focus on running back and wide receiver, because we lose, I mean, even if Von Pearson comes back, we lose him, North, Howard, Johnson. I mean, that's 4 players out there we're just losing to graduation in the draft. So we got to focus on skill positions again, which I know Butch knows what he's doing in recruiting. It's just that if we don't start winning on the field, these recruits are going to say, hey, man, like, I'm not going to go and waste my 4 years going 7-6 4 years in a row. Like, we got to start winning. And I think that's where a lot of recruits are standing on Tennessee. I think that's where Mecole Hardman kind of is. He seems like type of kid that he wants to go where he's going to win. And I think whoever does better at Georgia and Tennessee is going to get him. I mean, I think that regressing like South Carolina did, and he sees, oh, man, Mark Richt's probably going to be gone in a year or two. And he sees, you know, Butch Jones taking Tennessee to 9-3 and possibly even better the year after, then he's going to come to Tennessee. But I'm going to hop off here and listen up. I appreciate you guys taking the call, and I'll let you get on down the road.
Thanks, Chris. Calling in, Chris. Well, and Chris brought it up with Orange Carpet Day, and this is one of the things that is weird to me. It's position groups, and, you know, you mentioned Mecole Hardman, the wide receiver. You know, mm-hmm. Tennessee's going after these big skilled players, and one of the kids that was in town.
Mostly receivers. You talk about the skill players, mostly receivers. It's a scarcity of running backs coming in. Feaster was really the only one of note yesterday, and that's kind of scary. Mm-hmm. I mean,
Well, and one of the guys that was in town this past weekend, or this weekend, excuse me, was Hunter Johnson, a 2017 quarterback. He's the number four quarterback, or number four ranked player, according to Rivals. And I threw this out on Twitter late last night because he said great things about Tennessee. If I'm a 2017 quarterback, I wouldn't commit to Tennessee at all.
Yeah.
Because
it's already extremely crowded. Yeah, it's extremely crowded back there already.
Barring an injury, Josh Dobbs is your starter next season. And then after he leaves, your starter, in all likelihood, because they're going to have 2 years/1 year on the bench, 2 years of Quentin Dormady or Juwan Jennings, and 1 year mm-hmm. of Derek Garantano with a red shirt. Why would you come to Tennessee unless you see these guys and think you can, honest to God, beat them out? Why would you come to Tennessee? And I'm not slamming Tennessee or saying they shouldn't go after quarterbacks. It's nice to have depth, but Tennessee is set. And I also forgot Sherron Jones. I mean, eventually maybe one of these guys might transfer, but let's say they don't. Let's say everyone's perfectly healthy and doesn't transfer. So going into if you're a 2017 commit, going into the 2017 season, you're going to have probably Dormady as a redshirt. He'll be a redshirt freshman.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have Garantano as a redshirt.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, he'll be a redshirt freshman. Dormady will
One of those guys is burning a red shirt this year, guaranteed to burn a red shirt this year. So one of them will just be still a true sophomore because somebody's going to be having some mop-up duty in some of these games against some of these cupcakes. You can bet your life on that.
Yeah, I think at some point, probably during Bowling Green, Western Carolina, or North Texas, we're going to see Quentin Dormady unless they really just want to troll everybody and put Juwan Jennings out there and do that. But which is fine. But my biggest issue with how Tennessee recruits, and I'm not complaining about it, but if I was a recruit, I'm in sit and wait mode on Tennessee. I'm not committing to Tennessee until after this season's over for two reasons. One, I want to see wins.
That's absolutely correct. This is the model they're using right now for recruiting. To me, is the Alabama style recruiting model, and there's nothing wrong with that. They just got to have the wins, or it won't be successful. So, Alabama's not scared to sign a 5-star quarterback in every class. I mean, they don't. They usually go for the running backs and wide receivers, and just make it a kind of a system kind of quarterback. But I mean, they're not scared to go for 5 stars in every position every year. So, I think that's what Butch is trying to get to. I'm just not sure if it'll work without some immediate wins and some natties thrown in there. You know, it's tough to handle that kind of talent in one position without them all transferring away or getting disgruntled and, you know, just taking a turn for the worse. But, I mean, you look at Georgia, they've got Easton coming in this year, and, you know, they've already got a 2017 QB signed, and he's a 4-star stud too. So I guess it's the competition, and some of these kids aren't afraid of it. Like, they've got Bailey Hockman coming in next year to Georgia right behind Easton, so. I guess these kids like competition, and that's great.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I have no issue with if a kid wants to commit here and thinks he is better than somebody that's already committed or on the roster, especially, you know, at skill positions, yeah, bring on all the 5-star and 4-star receivers. But a quarterback, you better know damn well you're better than the other guy if you're going to commit. And so that's what I'm saying. My first thing is Tennessee needs wins. If I was a recruit right now, I want to see two things. I want to see wins out of Tennessee, because Lee, you and I talked about this on the phone the other day, off air, obviously. And Butch Jones can't play the playing time card anymore. That's not a back when NCAA football was on Xbox. You know, you had those recruiting promises, and playing time was one you could always use and stuff. Tennessee can't use that anymore. They used that the past two seasons. Now they've got bodies there. They have talented bodies there. They can't pull that card anymore. They mm-hmm. can't say, oh, hey, you know, Mr. D-tackle, yeah, you're going to be a starter day one if you commit here. No, because those kids are smart, and they're going to look at the roster and be like, what about Khalil McKenzie and Shy Tuttle? How are you promising me playing time when you've got these guys? And the second thing I want to see, and I'm dead serious about this, if I was a recruit, I want to see development.
Yeah.
I want to see a player. Don't tell me about a player you coached 6 years ago. Cool. You coached Antonio Brown. Cool. You passed J.J. Watt in a hallway and told him to move to offensive line. Cool. You coached Fisher in three games, and then he turned it into – you discovered him. Cool. I want you especially if I'm a wide receiver, because that's what Tennessee is just throwing out there. They're after receivers hard every year. If I'm a wide receiver, I'm going to say, let me look at your receivers that you've coached at Tennessee the past couple of years. And right now I'm looking at Pig Howard.
Josh Malone.
I'm looking at Pig Howard, who's going to be Pig Howard's not going to be a pro. Sorry, he's too small. I'm just going to go ahead and cut that out. Like, somebody may, if he has a breakout season or a huge season this year, somebody might take a sixth-round pick on him. He's too small.
I'm gonna disagree with you on that. I think he can fit on somewhere if he can play some special teams. He can do some punt returning and kick returning and be a fifth or sixth wide receiver for the slot. I think he might get on somewhere, because there's – you look at some of these receivers in the NFL now, some of these marginal teams, some of these lower-level teams, and, I mean, he could probably get in there.
I mean, he could, like I said, but I mean, Pig Howard will not be a first, second, third round
pick. No.
Even if he were Heisman this year, he wouldn't.
Come on now. Guys, if he gets the Heisman, he's not getting drafted. Come on, dude.
But I mean, come on. Pig Howard's 5'8", and he's listed at 187. But that's a generous 187. And with his off-field stuff, he's a flyer. But, I mean, if I was a wide receiver prospect right now, I'd say I want to see what you can develop. Because outside of Antonio Brown, has Butch Jones and his staff really developed a great wide receiver? I mean, looking at the wide receivers on the roster now, and yes, their injuries are taking into account here. Marquez North,
there's
had flashes, but he's been hurt, so I'll give him that. Vaughn Pearson.
You don't even have to go receiver by receiver. You can just whole squad is underachieved. That whole squad's underachieved. Just look at Malone and some of these other guys. I mean, there's nobody that's been developed in these last two plus years to be any better, really. I mean, Pig's about the same as he was, and he was decent, you know, when they got there. So you're absolutely right on that.
I'm not knocking the coaching staff, but if I was a recruit, I want to see how they develop. They've developed players at other positions, like Jalen Reeves-Maven. They've made him into a solid linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken care of Cam Sutton. They've made him from a three-star into arguably one of the best corners in the country, even though he's not on the Bednarik watch list. But outside of that, I mean, I want to see this coaching staff develop somebody. I want to see them take somebody from the ground up that has the skill. And right now, I could easily argue they're doing that with Jalen Hurd. Jalen Hurd is a great talent, and they're making him better. You know, going into the spring and summer workouts, going into the season, Jalen Hurd had a huge fumbling problem. I can't think of Jalen, outside of one fumble, I can't think of him fumbling any time last season, except for that one for the touchdown. I forget which game it was. Maybe it was Georgia. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm sitting here actually thinking, like, they've developed, and, you know, I'm not, I mean, I guess you could say Barnett. I mean, was he already capable of doing that? Or was that natural ability, or did they coach him up? So Barnett, really, I mean, that would be the only other one I could think of. really. There's no body of work to compare it against, though, because he was the first year guy with him. So.
Well, exactly, and that's why you know you want this coaching staff to be here for a while, and I'm setting unrealistic expectations because I know I'm probably going to get blasted for this once people listen to the podcast that they aren't listening now. But I mean, obviously, yeah, people are going to say, "Oh, Coach Jones has only been here 2 years. You can't judge his body of work developing players yet." That's true, but we can at this point start to see from last year to this upcoming season. If Derek Barnett falls off a little bit, and yeah, he's going to fall. He, in all likelihood, will fall off because there's a lot of tape on him now.
Yeah. Statistically. I don't think his effort will fall off. Statistically, he'll probably drop back.
Yeah, and he's going to be facing double teams. And the same thing with Dobbs. There's a lot of tape on him now. I mean, I still expect Dobbs to have a great season. I think he's the best quarterback in the East right now. Mm-hmm. But now that there's a lot of tape on him and how the offense changed from Justin Worley running it to Josh Dobbs running it, there is change. So it's going to be interesting to watch that. And I'm not knocking him. I just want to see development. I want to see them say, oh, hey, year by year, and this kid got better. And I wish I could use Marquez North as an example of that, but you know, he was hampered by injuries last year. And I think probably, like, and you said it, the best example, if we wanted to sit down and say, okay, here's an individual player that Tennessee developed, and that player is Josh Malone. We will see it this season if he has gotten better. And
he's a five star. He should be pretty much a plug and play guy. You know, you go out there and run routes, be faster than your other guy, the guy guarding you, and catch balls. That's all you got to do. So, yeah, he hasn't shown any kind of developmental skill so far. I mean, I'm speaking of Azani right now on his receivers, really. I really can't think of anyone, really, that he's actually developed. I mean, Jonathan Johnson, maybe. Because his talent was kind of marginal, and he actually made some decent plays to be what he is. But he's solid. You know, he's solid. Let's talk about your poll before we have to get off the air here. We only got 3 minutes left.
Well, we can go a little bit long today. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
We're in a nice groove today. Yeah, we do have a new poll. Usually, you know, once a month I teach myself something new on checkerboardradio.com. It is interesting trying to teach yourself how to build and create a great website for people. But today we do have a new poll up. It's something Lee and I talked about off air a couple days ago, or maybe a week ago. The top three UT quarterbacks in your lifetime. This isn't who do you think the top three quarterbacks in UT history are, but the ones that have been around when you've been alive. And I kind of maybe stereotyped this a little bit. The farthest back I went was 1969. I figured, 50-plus years of quarterbacks would be good enough just because, outside of my dad, I don't really know anybody over 60 that uses Twitter.
I'm sure there's some out there.
I'm probably going to get some angry tweet from somebody that has an egg for their Twitter picture and says, I'm on Twitter and I'm 95. I'm like, all right, cool, dude, go ball.
it's coming.
And so I set this poll up. You can vote from quarterbacks from Josh Dobbs all the way back to Bobby Scott in 1969 on checkerboardradio.com. I'm leaving it open indefinitely for people to vote on it. And we're going to do some other polls with other positions down the road to talk about. But
just a brief recap. I just refreshed. So leading away right now if you got it up already too.
Yeah, I just refreshed it and
okay, go ahead.
And I'm not seeing this as a surprise. 30% of the votes right now go to Peyton Manning, coming up in second. Lee, I'm gonna rub this in your face because I know you're gonna get angry about it.
I'm already looking at it. I know.
Just beating him, coming in at second right now, is Casey the Iceman Clausen. He's Schuler in third, Eric Ainge in fourth, T. Martin fifth, Condridge Holloway sixth, Dobbs coming in at seventh, above Tony Robinson.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think there's a couple troll votes for Rick Claus and Brent Schaefer. Todd Helton got a vote. Andy Kelly's got some votes. And Sterling Hinton, who we had on the show last weekend, has a vote.
I bet Sterling came on. I bet Sterling came on and voted for himself. I'm gonna ask him about that after the show.
I'm kind of shocked. I put down every quarterback that has started a game for Tennessee since 1969. And I'm kind of shocked, and I'll tweet out the link for it more and more throughout today and this week. But I was expecting, honestly, a Crompton vote here or there, a couple Bray votes. But
I'm absolutely shocked that the Iceman's in second, because I know he probably one of the most successful UT quarterbacks of all time as far as wins go, but the way he beat Florida so many times, but. I'm surprised he's in second, because most folks don't really have a high opinion of him because of his attitude or whatever. He wasn't like a favorite. That's kind of odd to me that he's getting so much love.
Yeah, and T's getting votes, obviously, for the national championship here. I'm not surprised to see Condridge getting votes, I guess. But like I said, it is your lifetime. And so, for me, I was born in 1987. So the quarterbacks from my lifetime have been Peyton, Casey Clausen, Heath Shuler when I was, from 92 to 94 when I was a small child, Ainge, T. Martin, Dobbs, Rick Clausen, Schaefer, Todd Helton. But, you don't remember the stuff when you're a small child, when, you're five, six, seven. You don't, you can go back and watch the tape. But, from the quarterbacks I can remember watching, the ones I can remember are Peyton, Clausen, Ainge, D. Martin, Dobbs, the other Clausen, and Schaefer. I'll be honest, my three votes were Peyton, Casey, and Ainge.
Put Ainge in there, huh? My three were Peyton, Shuler, and Tony Robinson. So, and
you were the Tony Robinson votes?
He's got two.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. I've seen it in, on old DVDs and, recaps on, ESPN Classic. I wish I could have seen – did you see Tony Robinson play live?
Oh, yeah. I was a kid, but, I've got the old Sports Illustrated cover of him where he was on the front cover, with one hand, almost on the ground, and he's about to throw it with the other hand, and it's just kind of the Tennessee Waltz on there. I've still got that Sports Illustrated cover. So, he was fun to watch, man. I hate the things that happened to him, But he was fun to watch. I was actually in school up there when Andy Kelly was quarterback. So that's how old I am. So and he was probably my fourth. If I had one more vote, I would have picked him fourth, just because he's a cool guy and he did the best he could with what he had. So.
Well, and that thing, I've joked on the show and. Back when I was with TSR, one of the first times I was joking around with Ainge, I honestly, gun to my head, I was a Brent Schaefer guy, and steal a little thunder, especially with how the game was started to change a little bit back in 2004, 2005. Steal a little thunder from old Levi Popcorn Sutton. I like my mobile black quarterbacks.
Yeah, I like a mobile too. And that's why I like Shuler. That's why I like Shuler. Shuler was like a bulldozer. He was like a fullback / quarterback. I mean, he could run over you. He could run by you. He could throw it farther than a receiver can run to catch it. I mean, he was just a freak athlete. So he's probably, if I had to rank the three out of the three, I'd put him one and Peyton second. So and then Tony third. But yeah, man, I'm a big Shuler mark, as you already know.
Well, Lee, I'll ask you this. Since we're going to do this kind of probably week by week, we'll just do it. Polls for players, your favorite in your lifetime. I'll let you pick the next position we do.
All right. Well, it's wide receiver. It's wide receiver. You. So let's do receivers.
So just off the top of your head right now, spitballing, who would be your top three wide receivers in your lifetime?
I'd go. There's so many though. I mean, there were so many when I was younger that were just beef. But obviously, I'm gonna have to go with a friend of the show, Joey Kent, just because of the straight numbers. Of course, he said a lot of that had to do with his quarterback. He had a pretty decent quarterback with him. Pierce Price, maybe. And I'm going to take it back to my era, I guess, you know, maybe Alvin Harper. I mean, he was an animal. A guy could, like, 360 dunk. I mean, he leaped through the ceiling. I mean, he was 6'5 and a half, 6'6", just a stud athlete. So I'd say those three off the top of my head. There's a bunch of other ones that could have made it in there easily.
Top of my head. I'll throw mine out there. I'm going to go, I'll read Peerless on you. And these are no particular order. I'm going to go Peerless, Marcus Nash.
Oh.
And my third one, I'm surprised he, once I say his name, you'll probably consider him Robert Meacham.
Say it again, I didn't hear you. It kind of broke up.
Robert Meacham for my third.
Meacham? Oh, yeah. Meacham was a stud, yeah. I can deal with that.
I was a senior in high school his freshman year. And that, you know, I think his first two catches were like 25 plus yard touchdowns. And I kept saying all season, you know, in high school, I'm like, man, this Meacham kid's going to be good. This Meacham kid's going to be good. And then UNLV, boom, he catches it. And I was like, I went to school on Monday. I was like, I told y'all, this kid's going to be a baller.
Yeah, he's a stud, man. Had a good long NFL career, too. He played for a while.
He's still bouncing around. He got that paycheck out at San Diego and then went, let me see, I think he went back to the Saints. Oh, no, he's a free agent now. Yeah, he went to the Chargers for a year, got a nice check from them, and then left. But it looks like he is – not on the roster anymore with New Orleans.
I thought he had a lingering injury issue that was really hampering him in his last few years. That's why he bounced around a lot. And I think he might have ended the year on injured reserve for the Saints, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I mean, I know I was looking, you know, I always try to keep up with past laws and the pros because, I mean, they're kind of dwindling in numbers since we're going through this drought right now, and it's going to be ugly in about 4 years. Probably the number of kids we have in the pros, but especially after Peyton leaves, and it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a big Meacham fan. I loved him down in New Orleans. I mean, his guys, just looking at his second year with them, and, you know, they spread the ball around, but he had 722 yards and 9 touchdowns with them in his second year. Wide receiver use. So, yeah, we'll do that next week. I'll put it together probably towards the end of the week and give people a chance to vote on it. You and I can debate it out. We'll try to get some callers in and talk about them. I know we think we've got a guest lined up for our oldest balls segment next week.
We'll go ahead and say it because it's pretty solid. So, former Vol Andre Lott will be on the show with us next week, barring any kind of catastrophe. He was going to come on today, but had something come up last minute. So, and scheduled for next week at 11:30.
Yeah, it'll be fun to have him on, you know, and I'm sure you're pumped because he did spend some time with your Steelers. Even though that's
we could tie him into that poll because I'm sure some of the best receivers he faced were in practice. So that'd be interesting.
And that's one of the things I kind of like about where Tennessee's getting back to now is. And since we just mentioned the Steelers, I'll throw a little Patriots thing out. You know, one of their Patriots receivers said, you know, he got better this past season because he was going against Brandon Browner and Darrell Revis. And that's the kind of thing I like to look at with Tennessee is if I'm a wide receiver, you know, hey, every day I'm going up against Cam Sutton. I'm going against somebody good. And I think when we had Joey Kent on, he mentioned it, you know, He said practices were harder than the games just because of who he was going up against.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Tennessee is starting to get to that point where, you know, especially if you look at the offensive line is going to be going against, you know, Khalil and Shy Tuttle,
Owen
Williams, Daniel Brown. They're going to be going against great talent. And then, okay, cool. You know, this D tackle from Kentucky, this is just like a warm up to what I normally do at practice. So that's pretty cool to see.
Yep.
But
oh yeah, look for vast improvement from those three interior linemen. I know it's gonna be Robertson and Jackson at the guards, and whoever the center may be, Coleman or Crowder. I keep calling him Crawford.
Crowder. Yeah.
Those guys will be much improved having to go up against that rotation of DTs every day.
Yeah, that's gonna be really cool to see, and you know you gotta love that Tennessee is getting that depth back where it should be in, you know, early 2000s, 90s, where, you know, somebody went out, somebody just as good, if not better, stepped up. I mean, you just look at the running backs in the 90s. Oh, Travis Henry gets hurt. Cool. Let's put in Travis Stevens. Oh, he's hurt. Let's put in Jamal Lewis. So that'll be cool to see.
Yeah.
But as we wrap up, you know, like I said, we'll be back next week. Talking about some wide receivers, and then we'll also have Andre Lott on the show. Hopefully nothing bad or catastrophic happens this week off the field for some Tennessee players, because my guess is they're all on lockdown. I'm Andrew Durego. For Lee Crow, I'm Andrew Durego. Make sure you check out checkerboardradio.com where you can vote on your favorite three UT quarterbacks in your lifetime. Make sure you download the Fall Sports Radio app at the Sporto channel. You can also follow it on Twitter at Falls Radio. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Lee Crow and at AW Drago. Like I said, for Lee, this has been Checkerboard Radio. Y'all have a great day.
3, 2, 1.
CheckerboardRadio.com. You're listening to Checkerboard Radio, a V-Sporto channel.
Yeah, Barbara, it's Richie. Yeah, look, I ain't never coming home no more. Take it easy.